يا حسين 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 يا حسين 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 يا حسين 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 يا حسين حسين حسين
أنت إمامي إليك انتمائي منك قريب في كربلاء في كربلاء.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله الذي لا يبلغ مدحته القائلون ولا يحصي نعماءه العادون ولا يؤدي حقه المجتحدون الذي لا يدركه بعد الحمم ولا يناله غوص الفطن ثم الصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين حبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين صاحب العصر والزمان خليفة الرحمن إمام الإنس والجان ولعن الله وعداهم أجمعين إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله وقوله الحق. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ظهر الفساد في البر والبحر بما كسبت أيدي الناس ليذيقهم بعض الذي عملوا لعلهم يرجعون. صدق الله العلي العظيم. The Islamic perspective on minimalism has been our topic. Tonight is lecture number 9. Alhamdulillah, we have had many discussions in my time here with all of you, and the ashra is slowly coming to an end. And up until now, the attempt has been, the niyat has been really to change the way that we look at life in general, to adopt this life of a minimalist, to understand at the level of consumption that we do, to be sustainable consumers, to be conscious consumers, individuals who don't need to find contentment in our possessions or need to redefine our worldview. And the past few nights we have looked at this concept of minimalism through the eyes of attachment, through the eyes of the desire. And last night we made a connection between preparing ourselves for the arrival of Imam Hujjah and this life of minimalism. I have two more lectures on this topic with all of you tonight and tomorrow. My last official lecture will be the day after Ashura, being on Wednesday. Well, we'll kind of conclude the topic in general, but these two that are remaining are crucial. Going along with my flight path example, we're now of course descending onto our destination, and we save these last two discussions to be those that, according to me, are the most critical. I've been using a term throughout these 9 lectures called conscious consumption, and while I've done my best to kind of define the idea of consumption and possession, what I think I have yet to define is the idea of consciousness. To be conscious of what we do, to have a level of consciousness, a level of awareness, an intention, a qasd, a focus, a clarity. If you remember my definition of minimalism way back when, now 9 lectures ago, I talked about the fact that minimalism brings about clarity in our life, a focus, a purpose, a destination, really. And the reason why it does that, because it forces us and moves us towards a level of being conscious individuals, being present individuals, knowing exactly why we're doing what we're doing and not mistaking it for anything else. In this era, in this life that we live in, where there's a lot of hustle and bustle and, you know, just to kind of make ends meet, we're running around. To be present at all times, to be conscious of what we're doing, is essential. If we're not conscious, or we do things subconsciously as muscle memory, we end up making decisions that later on we regret. Or we end up living a life that really we have no business living, as I've been talking about now for the past 9 nights. Islam has identified consciousness as the niyat in Islam, as this qasd, this intention that we have behind everything that we do. And all of you have heard the various traditions about the importance of niyat and intention. You know that it is referred to the, as the various traditions say, as the ruh of the ibadat, as the spirit of the worship. It could be that one act of worship could either lead towards Allah or move us away from Allah, simply based on the intention. It could be that two people are performing the exact same act. One has an immense reward, one has an immense punishment. Exact same physical act, but two different niyats, two different level of consciousness. You don't know why you're doing what you're doing, or you incorrectly do what you're doing. And so naturally tonight I want to look at this idea, this concept of consciousness, to be present in the moment through various dimensions and various ayat and ahadith, like I like to do, to make us understand that in this era where really we're being distracted and bombarded by distractions, to refocus, regain our clarity, and once again be conscious individuals. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. First of all, the effects of being an individual who is conscious of what you're doing. Our Holy Prophet Muhammad Mustafa sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. Has a very powerful tradition. He says, "Man arada Allahu bi qalilin min a'malahu." Man arada Allahu bi qalilin min amalihi. That very small act, the qalil act that we do. But we do it with what? Man arada Allah, with the irada and the will and the consciousness of God. Hatta a very small act, right? بِقَلِيلِ مِنْ عَمَلِهِ. Allah takes that small act, أَظْهَرَ اللَّهُ أَكْثَرَ, takes that small act and makes it into a monumental act in the eyes of the people. Meaning, an act that I've done that's very small, perhaps to me is very, you know, an everyday, mundane, minute act, I'll be a good act, I'm a lekhair. I don't do it for anybody else, I don't do it to show, I don't do it, you know, for recognition or for anything. I do it for Allah, fi sabilillah. Allah takes that act and He makes it an avenue for respect amongst the people for me. Then the hadith goes on, مَنْ أَرَادَ النَّاسِ بِكَثِيرِ مِنْ عَمَلِهِ. Now, an individual does a monumental, a significant act, which on the outside is a good act, but he does it, مَنْ أَرَادَ النَّاسِ, with the consciousness of I'm trying to please and doing it for the people. My niyat is for the people. Allah takes that kafir act, yuqalliluhu, and makes it qalil in front of Him. Meaning this act that this person thought, if I just do this one act, I'll gain the shu'rat and the fame and the respect and the izzah from the people. Allah takes that act and makes it insignificant in the eyes of the people. All based on what? Irada. All based on this intention, this consciousness of God inside of our acts. The very first discussion I had on the second of Muharram was the idea that minimalism forces us to redefine our GPS destination, correct? That cannot change. Everything we do is to get to that destination. Now, full circle, right? 9 lectures later, the exact same thing happens in this hadith. That even if it's a small, minor act, if it's for the right destination, it becomes monumental for you. That's why Imam Ali says, what's better than the amal khayr is the amal khayr. What's better than the fi'il is the fa'il. What's better than the actual good deed is the doer of the good deed. Because he's taken that good deed and he's made it a proper conscious decision to do it for Allah. And what's worse than the evil deed is the doer of the evil deed, because there was a conscious decision to do that evilness. So consciousness, niyat, intention, irada, all of it together can either cause to make or break the amal. So sometimes we think that we're going along the path of good, 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 and I have a beautiful reward waiting for me. Meanwhile, on the day of judgment, we'll be handed the book of deeds, we'll look through it, and we'll complain to God that, God, there's pages missing in this book. There's deeds missing in this book. I did this deed at this place, and this deed at this, that, at this day. And the response will come, say, no doubt you did it, but you didn't do it for me. So go seek the person or the people you did it for and ask them for your reward. This is a book of deeds you did fi sabilillah, for me. One of the biggest challenges that we have, all of us, young or old, is true ikhlas inside of our actions. To be present and to be conscious of God in everything that we do. There always seems to be an element of the nafs inside everything that we do. Be it the fact that if I do something good, I want a plaque put up somewhere, or if I'm a teacher at some school and it comes time for awards day, I want my name called for me to come up and be recognized. If I don't, then oh, there's hangama and qiyamah. That you missed my name on the list of teachers. Where's my plaque for my donation? Because I want that appreciation, I want that talia, I want that shabash, I want that pat on the back. And that element of nafs might be enough to corrupt and stain that act that really was for the sake of God. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq, alayhi salatu wasalam, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad. He says, what's more difficult than to establish that sincere act, that conscious act, is to what? Maintain that consciousness throughout the act. That's very difficult. It's very difficult to do that. Because after a while, the nafs comes in, shaitan comes in, oh, you know, you have so much fame and your name is plastered everywhere. It feels good. Yes, it does. If you continue to do it, you'll have even more fame and more izzat. And we take the izzat that belongs to Allah and we begin to what? Keep it for ourselves. That now I'm in charge of my own izzat. And I do it subconsciously, but without Allah. And now, of course, the act is, you know, the sincerity is gone. So being conscious of what we're doing, being present at all times of what we're doing and why we're doing it, keeping that decision in mind is key to what I'm trying to establish these past 9 nights. Because consciousness now breeds a number of things. When you are conscious and you are aware of what you're doing, then it obviously gives life to a number of things that are very critical in the building of minimalism. There's a long list. I'll mention 2 things. The first thing it does is that it teaches us self-discipline. And with self-discipline, 2 things come about. Number one, we understand our limits, our hudud. We understand our deficiencies, what we can do right, what we can do wrong. And once we identify those limits inside of me, I don't travel outside those limits. Overconsumption, consumerism, materialism only happens inside of us when I haven't properly identified my limits. I begin to live a life outside of me. And one thing that minimalism crushes is dualism. This duality we live by. where on one side I present life A, but really inside my home I have life B. And this, you know, this two lives that I live in front of people, sometimes it's very, very daunting. I present a life like this, but in reality, I know inside of me, my life is something else. After a while, that leads to mental health issues, anxiety, depression, stress. You end up now exceeding your limits and entering a world that you have no business entering. Because you weren't conscious of what your limits were. Embrace those limits. You don't need to compare to everybody else. One of the biggest mistakes that Shaitan made, that we make sometimes, it was comparison. Ana khayrun minhu, I'm better than he is. That was his downfall. That was what triggered his ego. That's what blocked him from doing sajda in front of Adam and breaking the law of Allah. And we have mastered the art of comparison between my life and her life, my life and his life. Not knowing they have their limits, I have my limits. They have their struggles, I have my struggles. They have their test, I have my test. Sometimes we think we look to someone's life, I always say this, we look to someone's life, we think, you know what? I want that life, I want that life, I want that life. And sometimes we don't understand that while I'm looking for person A, wishing that I had their life, there's 10 other people looking at me, wishing they had my life. It's all a journey, right? It's all your individual path. It's all that climb I talked about up the mountain. Now you're climbing the mountain, looking to your left and right. Oh, he's there, she's there. He has those shoes. She has that equipment. No, understand your limits. Consciousness now tells you your limits. Your self-discipline. Then you live within those limits. That's what justice is, right? When you place things accordingly, that's just. When things are not where they should be, there's injustice. Be it at the level of consumption or be at the level of our worship. We try to be someone we're not, because that's what I think God wants from me. Or I try to live a life that I have no business living, because that's what society dictates to me. So I overconsume, I overpossess. All that is a lack of consciousness. The first thing that consciousness gives is self-discipline. The second thing it gives is a level of emotional intelligence. That's a big topic, a huge topic, an entire ashra on emotional intelligence. What I mean by that is this. Sallu ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. We are emotional beings. We experience a wide array of emotions. Sometimes what we lack, what people like me lack, is not the emotion, it's to identify what emotion it is. So sometimes I react to an emotion inside of me incorrectly because I haven't identified what the emotion is to begin with, or what the trigger of that emotion is. So while on the outside I'm angry, really inside I'm envious. Or if on the outside, let's say I'm scared, really on the inside I'm sad and grieving. So I'll treat the fear, but not the sadness. I'll treat the anger, but not the envy, and chaos ensues. Like sometimes, you know, you come home from a very, very rough day at work, and you come home and you're huffing and you're puffing and you're angry, you're slamming doors and you're stomping your feet. You know, when men get angry, we become a little bit childish, right? Don't look at me, don't talk to me, you're frowning, you're angry. And the first question your wife asks is, did you have your lunch today? Did you eat your lunch today? And you said, no, I skipped lunch. And she says, well, you're not angry, you're just hangry. That's all you are. You're hangry. So now you're upset, you're fuming, man, and one mandazi, and all of a sudden everything is fine. Everything's great now. It was all what? It was all hunger. You were angry because you couldn't eat. Now, if you had treated the anger without the mandazi, you would have made some foolish decisions. Sometimes a lack of emotional intelligence leads to what? Leads to unsupervised decisions. We're not conscious of our emotions. We're not present at the moment. And so we are treating an emotion that wasn't there to begin with. I'll give you a very simple example. Let's say, for example, you're somebody who's always wanted to be an author of a book, a children's author, let's say, for example. Okay? And I'm leading towards a Quranic discussion in a moment. And let's say you hear that somebody in your community has just written a Islamic kids book. Okay? And, you know, mashallah, it's a fantastic book, and she's getting praise for it, and the tabligh bookstore is selling it, it's selling out, and there's hashtags, and there's posts, and there's just, it's going viral, this book. And everyone is celebrating, everybody's so happy for you, but you're cringing on the inside. And you start to lash out at her, inside of you, you think, oh, look at her, she's walking around, this and that, she doesn't deserve this. And you're upset and you're angry and it doesn't allow you now to be happy for her. Why? Because your dream has always been to be a kid's author. But you got married too young and had a kid right away. And the business of life caught up to you and this dream was left unfulfilled. Now you're angry at her, but really you're what? You're resentful towards the fact that life took you somewhere else. You don't treat the resentment, you continue to be unhappy with her. There are some people that no matter who you talk about, they have this look on their face like everyone is the bad guy. You talk well of somebody, and say, oh, you don't know them like I do. Let me tell you about them. And any chance of any dhikr-e-khair or any sort of, you know, good suggestions or compliments, they'll crush that because they can't stand the fact that somebody else now is getting complimented except for me. We have to identify that. And sometimes we can't. So when someone asks you why you're so angry, you have no idea why you're angry. And that even frustrates you more. And because we don't have that emotional intelligence, we go out making decisions based on that ignorance. So we binge watch or binge shop or binge eat. I'm angry, I want to numb that, so I go out and I buy things and I consume things that I shouldn't consume. All because I'm not able to identify that. Now Surah Yusuf identified, it captures this moment very, very clearly. Surah Yusuf is that surah, of course, where this from starting to end, this story of Nabi Yusuf very beautifully is told. In the very beginning verses of this surah, Nabi Yusuf approaches his father and talks about this dream he has. Right? Inni ra'aytu ahadan ashara kawkaban. I saw what? 11 stars. Wa shamsa and a sun. Wal qamara and a moon. Ra'aytuhum li sajidin. All of them were doing sajda to me. He goes to his father, tells his father. The very next verse, the father says, immediately, ya bunayya la taqsud ru'yaka ala ikhwatik. Don't tell your brothers what you saw. Fayakidu laku kayda. They're going to plot against you. Don't you dare tell them about this story, this dream of 11 stars and the sun and the moon doing sajda to you. Now, we all know that Nabi Yusuf had the ability to interpret dreams, correct? We all knew that. But I don't think I've read anywhere where that ability and that ilm and that knowledge was given to his brothers. So if tomorrow he was to tell his brothers that, oh, by the way, I saw this dream of 11 stars and the sun and the moon worshipping me, they won't understand the true essence of the dream. They won't. But Nabi Yaqub knew the emotional state of his son so well that he knew that any sort of a hint that maybe this dream is about Nabi Yusuf and his high status, they'll plot against Nabi Yusuf. You know, there are some people that, you know, when you talk to them about others, as I mentioned, there's a hint of, you know, you might compliment them, they get physically upset. They didn't want to hear anything about this one person. Don't tell me about anything about how great this person is. Yeah, I've heard it, I know, he's amazing, I get it. I don't want to hear that. It makes me upset. That's how the brothers of Nabi Yusuf were, not all of them, were towards Nabi Yusuf. And Nabi Yaqub understood that, had the emotional intelligence of his sons. Why do I mention that? Because this entire movement of minimalism is a family system. I'm not asking the wife to be a minimalist and the husband not to be, or the kid to be minimalist and the parents not to be. No, it has to be a collective family unit, movement towards Allah. Four of you, five of you, eight of you, together towards Allah. Where you have to identify the emotional intelligence of each other. You have to be able now to help your wife identify her emotions, and vice versa. Understand what the triggers are of your son, or your daughter, or your father, or your mother. Here Nabi Yaqub is telling Nabi Yusuf, I know my sons very well. Even if the dream might hint at the fact that you're being complimented or elevated, they will plot against you. So he said, don't tell them. Now you'll tell me that, look, ultimately they grabbed him and they put him in the well. So it didn't matter. That's a different story altogether. They didn't do it because of the dream. They did it because of something else. Their envy and their jealousy. But when Nabi Yaqub was able to identify that emotion, and warn Nabi Yusuf, don't do this in terms of the dream, he was able now to avoid any sort of chaos. When we are emotionally intelligent, and there are some of us who are very emotional beings, and we, you know, we show our emotions on our sleeves. When we lack that intelligence, we end up making decisions that don't involve the conscious. And we end up making these decisions that don't lack any intellect or reasoning. End up living a life that's outside the scope of our limits. Because we don't have that consciousness. And Islam and the Quran and Allah subhanahu up and down the deen always says, look, be conscious of what you're doing. I mentioned this in the khutbah on Friday. The Holy Prophet's beautiful advice to Abu Dhar was what? Oh, Abu Dhar, attach a niyyah to everything that you do. Meaning what? Attach consciousness to everything that you do. Let me use today's verbiage. These are all concepts that were 1400 years old already. The West now has wrapped it up nicely in a bow and said, oh look, well, look what we found. It's all Islamic discussions. It could be that something that is mubah in nature becomes mustahab. Look, we have classifications of amal, five of them, correct, in the deen. Either something is wajib or haram or makruh or mustahab or mubah, correct? There are those things that you have to do, those things that you cannot do, those things that you should do, those things that you should refrain from. And then mubah is those acts that don't fall into any of the four, right? Random everyday acts. Like buttoning your shirt, for example, putting on your glasses, for example, opening the door, for example. Those are mubah acts. The ulama of akhlaq say that we should try to strive for this life where we what? We reduce the five down to four if possible. That our acts should only be either wajib, haram, makruh, or mustahab. The mubah is gone. By what? By attaching a niyyah to even everyday mundane acts. Such that that mubah act becomes a mustahab act. All by what? All by consciousness. All by consciousness. Because when we don't have the right consciousness, like I said, it could be that an act that is outside khair ends up being something difficult. I'll give you an example. We had a Q&A on Thursday at the Tabligh building, and a lot of mashallah youth showed up. It was a packed house. Now I want you to imagine that one male youth, two of them now are walking towards the Tabligh building. And they each have their respective niyats and their consciousness, what they're doing. I know why I'm walking to the Tabligh building for a Q&A with Sayyid Asad. I know exactly why I'm doing it. One says, I'm going there to learn and to increase my knowledge and to be with my brothers. That's amazing. One, God forbid, says that I'm going there because I know there'll be sisters there. I just want to catch a glimpse. Walking towards what? A Q&A session about the deen. And the level of consciousness are two different things. If he is searching for ilm, one of them, it almost becomes wajib. If he's going to look at non-mahram, it becomes haram. These are simple examples all of you know, just reminders to all of you. But that's the importance of being present when you do something. We're consuming water, we're consuming our meal, we're filling our plates. If we're not conscious at that moment, then we'll go down this idea of overconsumption. If we don't know why we're possessing what we possess, or we're doing it with the wrong state of mind or the wrong emotional intelligence, when now I feel like this screen of a TV that I have in my house, I'm entitled to that because so far I've had a horrible life. And I'm resentful towards my life, so that resentment now translates into overconsumption. Happens all the time. My time, my time, my time, Milana. I've sacrificed and sacrificed for my husband, for my wife, for my kids, for my in-laws. All that is now gone. It's my time, so let me now go crazy. Buy things that I don't need with money I don't have to please someone who's not there. All with the wrong level of consciousness. Because that consciousness resides inside the hearts. That's where you have to be conscious of what you're doing. Look at this, look at these verses that all of you have memorized. Surah Shu'ara, 87-88. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yawma la yanfa'u malun wala banun illa man atallaha biqalbin salim. Asat. We haven't memorized, but stop and think, what is God telling you on that day, the day of judgment? Two things will be of no benefit for you. Mal, banun, wealth and property and your children. Two things that we die for in this world. Two things that we get up in the morning for in the world. Two things that we work our tail off for, these two things. And God's saying, oh, by the way, these two things that you're dying for, no benefit. Illa, except, man atallaha biqalbin salim. If you go with Allah with a sahih, salim, qalb, and a heart, then these things now become beneficial for you. Meaning what? You have the right level of consciousness, then your mal now, your banoon now, all of it becomes for Allah. Remember my talk two days ago, that story of Ala ibn Ziyad, Asim ibn Ziyad, of the mansion. That mansion can be a bridge towards a mansion in the hereafter. Nothing wrong with that. Provided what? Qalb salim. If we don't have the right level of consciousness, or we have none at all, we're just living like robots subconsciously, then everything we're striving for now becomes no benefit to us on the Day of Judgment. And that's sad. That's upsetting. Because the reality is we don't have multiple hearts. We only have one. Allah very openly says, in Surah Al-Ahzab, مَا جَعَلَ اللَّهُ لِرَجُلٍ مِّنْ قَلْبَيْنِ فِي جَوْفِهِ. I did not place two hearts inside the chest of man. I didn't give him two hearts or three hearts. I gave him one heart. He has one heart. Sometimes we live our lives like we have multiple hearts. There's one heart only in there. There's no قَلْبَيْن, there's no two hearts in there. So we have to now be at a level where we are intent on living our life with all the various tools around us towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it's a struggle. I get it. I've been saying that to you for the past two or three nights now. I don't want anyone thinking this guy came, he left, and he made it sound so easy. It's not easy. It's a struggle. I asked you last night, night before, accept that struggle. I'm with you as well. I'm surrounded by capitalism in the West, surrounded by it. From in my pocket, to on my TV screen, to on my devices, to everywhere I go. It is a conscious decision. And the Quran says, لَيْسَ لِلْإِنسَانِ إِلَّا مَا سَعَى. You are nothing, the insan, but what you strive for, what you struggle for. Consciousness, to be present at all times, is a struggle in this era of distraction. And the Quran says that whatever you strive for, you'll become that. You'll be known for that, good or bad. And then Allah says, "Alladhina jahadu fina linahdiyannahum sabulana." When you take that strive and struggle fina in our way, Allah begins to open up doors for you. وَمَن يَتَّقِ اللَّهَ يَجْعَلُهُ مَخْرَجًا. You have that consciousness of God, the right level of consciousness. يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا. Allah gives you a solution, an outlet, an exit. And then He gives you رِزْق مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبْ. From a source that you never even accounted for. How many doors have closed of risk for us? How many doors have closed of unhappiness for us? And a door that we never even thought was a door to begin with opens up. Bismillah, come right through. Provided what? مَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ. That consciousness of God has to be there. صَلُّوا عَلَى مُحَمَّدُ وَعَلَى مُحَمَّدُ. Be present in everything that you do. Be conscious of everything that you're doing. Even those everyday mundane acts. Yes, I get it. It's very, very hard. But at least let's put forth an effort. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I buying what I'm buying? Why am I consuming what I'm consuming? It's vital that we do that. Otherwise, what ends up happening is, like I said, we go down the route of chaos. And it's this very level of minimalism that requires a sacrifice. لَن تَنَالُوا الْبِرَّ حَتَّى تُنْفِقُوا مِمَّا تُحِبُّونَ. Verses that you know you've heard since you were a child. You will not reach that level of birr, abrar, righteousness, until you give out of what you love. The sacrifice that you have to make for a greater good, to work for a cause outside of you, to be conscious of that cause outside of you, and then live for that cause, is exactly precisely what that success is in this world. When you identify that level of sacrifice, at that moment then anything that you have can be sacrificed in the way. Imam Hussein's prime message is that. Every step of the way, every stop he made on his journey from Medina, Mecca, all the way to Karbala, any stop he made, he gave a khutbah, a small talk, to remind himself, remind those who are with him, remind those who are listening, what my purpose is. Consciousness every step of the way. Precision in his decision making, being present at all times. Keeping the focus in mind. Nowhere did we ever hear of a complaint or a gilah or a shikayat of Imam Hussein that I am your hujjat Allah, I'm from the Ahlul Bayt, and you're putting all this in front of me. Instead, it seemed like the tougher the test was for Hussein, the more itminan and more serene he was. Because his consciousness was present. He knew exactly what he was doing on the plains of Karbala with every single shaheed. But if ever there was a moment where Imam Hussein showed a little bit of the fact that this was a difficult test, was when his Ali ibn Akbar went to the Maidan of Karbala. It's a very difficult masail. One that I want all of you to truly understand. Sometimes we think for a moment that Imam Hussein didn't have those feelings and those emotions that you and I feel. And there's moments inside the history and the narrations inside Karbala that tell us that he was a father on the day of Karbala. He was an uncle on the day of Karbala, like you are. He was a brother like you are to your brother. He had a heart and he had love and compassion. Yes, his sacrifice is the azim, no doubt. It does not mean that it wasn't easy for him. It was very difficult. And the one shahadat that almost killed Imam Hussein was Ali Akbar. You know, when you see these young kids reading a noha in a julus somewhere, or a program somewhere, or in a main hall downstairs, you know, and they're standing on the stage and they're reading a noha or a marsiya or giving a speech or reading the Quran, whatever the case may be, somewhere close by that child, by that stage, is who? Is the father of that child. And he's glowing, right? So much pride. That's my son reading the marsiya, my son reading the noha, my son carrying the alam, my son giving that speech. He had this pride. People come to him and, oh, mashallah, your son read so well. And he's like, oh, thank you, pray for him, blah, blah, blah. Just immense pride. The morning of Ashura, when Imam Hussein heard that adhan of Ali Akbar, there wasn't a sense of pride there. That's my Ali Akbar. There would be lineups outside the door of Imam Hussein in Medina just to catch a glimpse of Ali Akbar. Because he was khulqan and khalqan a shabi, a resemblance of Rasulullah. When they remembered Rasulullah, they would go to the house of Hussein. There was a glow about him, an energy about him. And now this love and this heart of Imam Hussein is standing in front of him, says, Baba, the ashab are gone, the companions are gone, the family is left. Give me ijazat. Give me permission to go and sacrifice my life. Do we stop and fathom the idea that Imam Hussein now is being asked by his young son to go and give his life, to know that I will never see my Ali Akbar again? But the level of emotional intelligence, the level of the consciousness of what he was doing and why he was there for, immediately he gave permission. But he said, Ali Akbar, you must go see your aunt Zainab before you go to the Maidan of Karbala. Traditions say that Ali Akbar went to the Khayma where the women were to say his al-wida and khudafis and goodbyes. And reports say that the Khayma would open and close many, many times. That whenever Ali Akbar wished to leave the Khayma, another woman would stop him and say, you are the one that would remind us of Rasulullah. Ali Akbar comes out now, and now Imam Hussein is there to mount him on the horse. My fathers who have young sons inside your homes, take your hearts that moment now where they embrace. Imam Hussein wraps his arms around Ali Akbar. He cries, Ali Akbar cries, Ali Akbar cries, he cries. Mounts him on the horse, he says, you're going now, my son, go. If you can, every so often as you're riding into the Maidan of Karbala, just turn your face a little bit to show me your face. As you're going towards your shahadat and martyrdom, I can see your face one last time. Ali Akbar now rides into the Maidan of Karbala, but he could sense that there's somebody behind him. He stops the horse, looks behind him. A 57-year-old father is running after the horse. Ali Akbar gets down, picks up his father, hugs him. Baba, you gave me ijazat, Baba. You gave me permission, Baba. He begins to cry, Ali Akbar, if only you were sahib-e-aulad. If only you had children like I have in you, you would know how difficult this moment is for me. This was his son. His beloved son, Ali Akbar, roars into the Maidan of Karbala. Ana Ali ibn al-Husayn ibn Ali. I am that son of Hussein. The grandson of Ali begins to fight and begins to now kill one by one by one. And as always, they would surround him. They would ambush him. One riwayat says that one mal'oon comes from behind Ali Akbar and strikes him in the chest with a spear and breaks the handle off. Ali Akbar now begins to fall from the horse. Alayka minni salam, ya abata. He begins to fall from the horse. Imam Hussein goes running inside the Maidan of Karbala. There's khak in the air. At one moment, some narrations say that Imam Hussein says, Ali Akbar, Ali Akbar, tell me where you are. Tell me where you are. My vision is going. Aina, aina, Ali Akbar, where are you? He says, I'm here, Father. He would go with every other shaheed. Imam Hussein would place the head of that shaheed on the lap of Imam Hussein. But this was Ali Akbar. It was different. He took the cheek of Imam Ali Akbar and put it against his own cheek. Baba, there's pain in my chest, Baba. There's blood pouring from my chest, Baba. Imam Hussein lays down Ali Akbar on the plains of Karbala, his hand on his chest. He says, Ya Bunayya, remove your hand. He sees the spear lodged inside the chest. My Mawla Hussein attempts now to take the spear out of the chest. But every time he would do that, the body of Ali Akbar would go up and down on the plains of Karbala. My Mawla Hussein then attempts to take the spear out. This time he turns to Najaf, says, Baba, you were the one that ripped the door of Khaybar. Come to Karbala. See your Hussein. See my Ali Akbar. My Aqa Hussein put one knee on the chest of Ali Akbar, one foot on the plains of Karbala, grabbed the spear, said, Ya Ali, and ripped the spear. سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون إنا لله وإنا إليه راجعون مات من حسين يا حسين